Okay.
Last time we looked at character tables. So we have for a group the representation, so morphisms into matrix groups. These are complicated things. We want something which is easier to digest. And so we don't take the whole matrices, but we just take the trace of the matrices. And the trace is constant on conjugacy classes, so to write it down, we don't really need to write down images for all elements. It's sufficient to write down the values on conjugacy classes. And that's what we get if we do this, and we write this down for all the irreducible representations, we get what is called the character table. Of course, in terms of arrangement, you can rearrange the columns, you can rearrange the rows, that would still be a character table. Typically, people have the convention that the class of the identity element is in the first position, and they have the convention that the characters are sorted roughly by degree. I mean, the degrees are positive integers. If you sort them roughly, you probably have them sorted by degree. There isn't that much. But then there could be different arrangements. And one thing which I forgot to show you in an example, but which I think is useful, is actually to see how one would then could use this character table to determine decompositions. So let's go back to the example of S3 there, our character table. We have the class of the identity, the class of the transposition, and the class of the three cycle. And we have three irreducible representations. We have the trivial one. The trivial one always exists, regardless what group you have. We have one which is basically the sign of the permutation. And we have one which comes from S3 also being the dihedral group of order 6, the symmetries of a triangle. So on Friday, unless you get an email, assume that on Friday again there will not be a lecture.
Okay. Sorry.
So we have 2, 0, minus 1. Okay. And what I want to do is to pick another representation. So, what I'm going to take is what is called the permutation representation. This is my G of this group G. I could, for example, pick the permutation representation which is given by permuting basis vectors. Right? We had this before in examples. I take a three-dimensional vector space and I say the elements shall act on there by permuting the basis vectors in exactly the same way as the permutations do. So this element would swap the first and second basis vector. This element would permute the basis vector cyclically. Right? So that is a representation. And so what is the character? The associated character. Which is often called pi for permutation character. Well, let's write it. Yeah, well, the associated character is pi, but I will write it down here just because that will make life a little bit easier. Right. How can I find the value of a permutation character? So, my images are permutation matrices. Matrices which just act by permuting the basis vectors. Right? And to get the character value, I need the trace. The trace are the diagonal entries. What does it mean if a permutation matrix has a non-zero entry on the diagonal? That means that a basis vector is mapped to itself. right? Because a permutation matrix has only one non-zero entry in every row and every column. And that basically tells me the index number of where a basis vector is mapped. And if this non-zero entry is on the diagonal, it means a basis vector is mapped to itself. Okay, and since the basis vectors are permuted exactly in the same way as the points are permuted, this means a point is mapped to itself. Okay? So, the permutation character is simply counting the number of fixed points. The number of points from 1 to 3 which are fixed under the permutation. Okay, so with that observation, it is very easy to calculate the permutation character. I don't even need to do any further work here. So, well, how many fixed points does the identity have? 3. How many fixed points does this element have?
1.
How many fixed points does this element have?
0.
Very good. Okay. So that was very quick and painless. And now, that is the character of some representation. Well, the reason, or one of the reasons which got us towards using representation, using the characters, using the traces, was to say, well, the trace behaves nicely with respect to diagonal blocks, right? If a representation has sub-representations, or is the basically the direct sum of sub-representations, the character is a sum of the associated characters. So, I must be able to write this character as a linear combination of these characters, of these irreducible characters. And my coefficients need to be non-negative integers. Why that? Because it's simply the integers tell me how often does this representation arise. And that's a count that cannot be negative. And integers, because a representation is either there or not, it can't be there just after I proceed. So, every character must decompose into irreducible characters with non-negative integers. Okay, and if you now solve the associated system of linear equations, you will find that this pi is actually equal to chi1 plus chi3. Okay, I mean, once you know this, this is trivial to verify.
One more time, why can't it be negative?
Because you write, take your corresponding representation, write it in block forms where the blocks are irreducible sub-representations. Okay, then the trace of your original representation is the sum of the traces of the smaller representations.
Okay.
And so the total trace is simply the traces of the smaller representations multiplied with the factor tells me how often does it occur.
Mm-hmm.
And it cannot occur less than 0 times. Yeah. I mean, you can do things. You can look at something which are called virtual characters, where you allowed yourself negative coefficients. Then you don't really have representations, but you basically have formal differences of representations. In some cases, this is useful to look at, but that's far beyond what you need. Okay. So, what we have seen, and now we have seen with enormously little work, that this permutation representation must decompose in two blocks, one by one block, which is the trivial representation, and a two by two block, which is this representation. Right? And we did not have to do any base change. We did not have to search for sub-representations or do anything like this. The only thing we did was solving a linear algebra system of equations. Okay? And that's in some way the underlying reason why these characters are useful. This decomposition is now really easy to do. I mean, it also doesn't tell us immediately what phase change we would have to do, but I really didn't have to, but I never wrote down the concrete matrices. Two observations which probably are a little bit hard to prove unless we would go on for another 2 or 3 weeks. I mentioned that we had this inner product on characters, right? So we had the inner product and I haven't really proven that it is a proper inner product. I mean, the symmetric is not hard to see. The not degenerate is a little bit very so that there is no vector which is orthogonal to everything else is a little bit work. So if we have on class functions are functions on G that are constant on conjugacy classes. Namely, we define the product of two such class functions, phi and psi, to be 1 over the order of G, sum over G in G, phi of G times psi of G, complex conjugate. So it's a Hermitian inner product. The characters can have complex values. I didn't give you an example where it happens, but that is typically character tables have non-real entries. Okay, so I could have calculated, instead of solving the system of equations, I could have calculated inner products here. And they would, because these are proper inner products, they would have given me the coefficients. And if the character table is larger, this is easier. But two observations, and so this is as a fact, proof would take a little. So I won't give you proof of this. If I take the inner product of a permutation character with a trivial character, that is the number of orbits. Of the permutation representation. Okay. And well, that one can actually, well, that fact actually one could still see reasonably easily. Basically, to have the trivial representation in there, you need to be able to do a base change to some, what you get is that this, if you take the points in one orbit and you take the associated basis vectors, the sum of the associated basis vectors, that gives you something which is invariant, a one-dimensional subspace which is invariant. And on that subspace, the group acts trivially. So that gives you this trivial representation. And one can show that also works the other way around. So the trivial representation occurs in a permutation representation exactly as often as I have orbits. So because this group is acts transitively on the points 1, 2, 3, I get the trivial character only once. But I always must get it in a permutation. The other observation, and that is harder to prove, is if I took the inner product of a permutation character with itself. Okay, what is this inner? Okay, what is this inner product? If we believe that this thing is a proper inner product, knowing this decomposition, I can calculate immediately what the inner product is. Right? I have an ortho, assuming that, oh, and assuming that the characters form an orthonormal basis, which I haven't proven. I have a sum of two orthonormal vectors. That's my vector pi. And I take the inner product of this vector with itself. Well, distributive law, the value would be inner product of chi1 with chi1, but it's an orthonormal basis, inner product of chi. So, of a vector with itself is 1. Inner product of chi1 with chi3, I said orthonormal basis, so different irreducible characters are orthogonal, that contributes 0. Chi3 and chi1 also contribute 0, and chi3 with chi3 contributes 1. Okay, if an irreducible character would occur more than once, it gets a little bit more complicated, then it's not the number, but it's the multiplicity squared, right? Because you have the factor, the multiplicity on both sides of the inner product. But in this case, the inner product is just 2. Okay, that actually is the number of orbits of the points of a point stabilizer. Well, assuming if the group is transitive, if I'm initially transitive. So, S3, the point stabilizer, is an S2, the full symmetric group on 2 points. And on 3 points, that group has 2 orbits, namely the 1 point which it doesn't touch at all, and the rest. So, that's why this inner product must be 2, because I just have 2 orbits, and indeed it is 2. So, that would hold all the time. Let me do another example. And in some way, this is just a different permutation representation. It's the regular representation. Okay. What is the regular? It's the representation of a group by permutation of its elements. So I take other permutations and then take the corresponding permutation matrices, but permutations on the elements of the group by right multiplication. That's often called the regular permutation representation. Okay, so this is permutations of G itself. Right. So, what is this regular character? It's a permutation representation, so I just need to calculate the number of fixed points. Right? That's what we had seen before. Whenever I have a permutation representation, regardless which one, the permutation character is just the number of fixed points. So, what is this character value of some element of the group? Well, let's start with the identity elements. How many fixed points does the identity element have? If I'm acting on the group itself by right multiplication. All of them, yes. And how many there are, the order of the group. Right? So, that's the order of the group if little g is the identity. Right, if I take an element which is not the identity, so I have an element x, or well, I call it g there, can this element g have a fixed point on the group itself? What would this mean? This would mean there is an element h of the group, so that h times g is g, is h. H times g is h, right? If g is not the identity, that cannot happen. So that has to be zero otherwise. So if I take instead the regular permutation representation, rho, I know what this representation has to be. On the identity, it's the order of the group, and it's zero everywhere else. Okay, again, I decompose this vector in these three vectors. Here it probably goes quick enough to just do it by hand or by rule of thumb or something. In general, what one would probably do is actually to calculate these inner products. Okay, and if you do, I mean, I trust you know how to decompose a vector as a linear combination. You get this is chi1 plus chi2 plus 2 times chi3. Okay. And what holds in general is, okay, so as a permutation representation, yeah, probably I should have left this there before erasing. So if we look at this as a permutation representation, this character has inner product 1 with a trivial character, right? Because a trivial character occurs in there once. That says this permutation representation has one orbit. This action on 6 points. Yes, the group is transitive on its own elements by multiplication. That's not surprising. So that's what this one is telling us. What happens if we take the inner product of rho with itself? That, I said, will give us the number of orbits of the point stabilizer. The point stabilizer of a regular representation is the trivial group. How many orbits does the trivial group have on 6 points? Well, 6 orbits. So let's just check, what is the inner product with rho with itself? Again, using that these are orthonormal, it is 1 square plus 1 square plus 2 square. That's 6. Okay, so that there the world is consistent. And what actually holds in general, and again, I won't be able to prove, it is actually, if in the handouts I gave you, this is proven, but it takes a little while to go through all the details there. Is that the regular representation I can always write as sum over all irreducible characters. So by ir of g, people mean the set of irreducible characters chi of 1 times chi. Chi of 1 is the character degree. It's the dimension of the vector space in which this representation lives. So, there is actually a nice regular pattern there. In the regular representation, every irreducible representation occurs exactly as often as its degree says. So, I have 1 times this, 1 times this, 2 times this. And in particular, what this means is that the order of the group is the sum over all irreducible characters degree of the irreducible character squared. Right? Because I need this value here, I need to have the number of group elements, and that needs to be consistent with that linear combination. So 6 is 1 squared plus 1 squared plus 2 squared. And what this does is actually, it gives quite, that already gives quite some restriction on, for example, the character degrees I can have. For example, if you take the symmetric group S4. Okay. So S4, I claim, has 5 conjugacy classes. The identity, a single 2-cycle, a double 2-cycle, a 3-cycle, a 3-cycle, and a 2-cycle, and a 4-cycle. It has 6 conjugacy classes.
Do you have a three cycle and a two cycle?
Oh, I can't. I have four. Sorry. Thank you. Thank you. I thought I would have to come in again. Yeah. So there are five principal conjugacy classes of the symmetric group. As four are the identity, the two cycle, the double two cycle, the three cycle, and the four cycle. Yes. Thank you very much. I was wondering where the other one came from. Yeah. And you would have really gotten into trouble with six. So I would need to write 24 as sum of five squares, right? Okay. Okay. Now, what can I do? Well, I can tell a little bit more. The trivial representation is always there, right? So I have, one of them at least needs to be one. Okay, I can actually tell more about representations of degree one. Representations of degree one go into a set of 1x1 matrices. 1x1 matrices commute, they're just numbers. So every one-dimensional representation actually must come from the commutator factor group G modulo G prime. Okay, if you don't know what G prime is, just ignore that remark. But the derived subgroup, yes. And so there are, then with the argument, as just looking at that factor group, there are exactly as many one-dimensional characters as the commutator factor group, the G modulo G prime, has order. In the case of S4, it's the derived subgroup is A4, so I have factor 2, so I will have two one-dimensional characters. Namely, I have the trivial one, and again, I have the sign. Okay. And I actually would know the other ones can't have degree 1. Okay. So I need to write 22 as a sum of 3 squares. Okay. And if you now try that out, you don't really have very many possibilities that can happen. In particular, if you're not allowed to use 1. I mean, you have 1 square is 1, 2 square is 4, 3 square is 9, and 4 square is 16. Okay. So I want to write, if I had 4 in there, I would have 16. 16 and 9 is already bigger than 22. So if I had a 4, I couldn't have a 3. I only could have a 2. 16 and 4 is 20. Okay, and now I can't make up 2 with a 1 square or a 2 square. So I can't have 4 and 3. I can't have a 4. Oh, yeah, sorry. I can't have 4 and 2. And if I have 4 and 1, I would have 16, 17, 18. Also, doesn't matter. I can't have a 4. I only can have 3 at most. 3 square is 9. Okay, I could have 3 square plus 3 square. That is 18 plus 2 square. That's 22. Okay. Can I do something else? If I have a 3 square, if I don't have 2 3 squares, I would have 3 square plus 2 square plus 2 square. That's too little. And if I have 2s, it anyhow doesn't work. And I mean, with the same argument, if you have 5, it's 25. It's anyhow too big. So the only way how you can solve this is if you have 2, 3, and 3 there. If you order them by, I mean, the other solutions are permutations of these numbers. So only knowing that this group has order 24 and has 5 conjugacy classes tells us the irreducible representations must be of degree 1, 1, 2, 3, and 3. What are they? Well, I mentioned already that it's a trivial one. It's the sign of the permutation. S4 happens to have S3 as a factor group. That's a special thing for 4 and 3. It doesn't help for other degrees. And this two-dimensional representation is this representation of S3. I'm first mapping to the factor group S3, and then I take that representation. And what are the three-dimensional ones? One is the permutation, the natural permutation representation on 4 points, minus a trivial character, right? The trivial character always occurs in a permutation representation. That was the remark I made before. How often does it occur? How often is the number of orbits? I have one orbit, so it occurs once there. And what's the inner product of the permutation character? It's the number of orbits of the point stabilizer, which in this case is 2, so what remains must be irreducible. Because the only way how a linear combination of orthonormal vectors will have inner product 2 with itself is if it's the sum of 2 different vectors at the basis. So one of the three-dimensional representations comes from the permutation representation. What's the other one? Can I describe that easily? You can describe it in a certain combinatorial way, but by looking at actions on pairs, I think, and then taking some things away where you can reduce. Yeah. Anyhow, so what we get here is, again, one of the things which group theory aims for, namely to reduce structural problems of finite groups to essentially number theoretic or divisibility or some arithmetic questions which have only to do with the order of the group, okay, or here also the number of contiguous sequences. In general, there might be multiple. This doesn't always give you a unique solution. In this case, it does. But you can construct, if you have more conjugacy classes, often there are multiple options, and not every option is necessarily realized by a group. Okay. So, that's some of the things which you can do with characters. What I will finish with is basically, okay, I mentioned already, and I think I, last time, and I used it now a couple of times, so this product is a proper Hermitian inner product, and the irreducible characters form an orthonormal basis with respect to this product. The irreducible characters form an orthonormal basis. And these are really three properties, three letters, one letter per property. Ortho, different, two of them, two different ones are orthogonal. Normal, each of them has inner product, one with itself. And basis, they span the whole vector space. Okay, and in some way, at least, yes, I've seen the proof, I understand why it happens, but that is still, for me, almost a miraculous property. We start with something so goofy, we are taking the trace of matrices. This isn't even a homomorphism or anything. The only reason we did it because, well, that was the only thing we could think of which behaved nicely with respect to decomposition. And we end up with an orthonormal basis for a vector space. I mean, that's the nicest thing you can hope for in linear algebra. And that is, yeah, I find this very surprising. And yeah, so clearly something must have gone right in the definition of characters than just, oh, it has some properties which seem to be okay. I mean, the fact that we end up with such a strong structure at the end means, yes, there is certainly something going on. So, proving this is, again, the proof for this is in the handout. It is not horribly hard to prove. it is a little bit lengthy to do. So what I thought is I'll just give you a bit the idea why this is going to happen. And the reason why this is going to happen is basically because of something which is called Schur's lemma. Okay. What does this lemma say? And I mean, in the handout, you will find that there it is spelled out as Schur's lemma. And it's named after Isai Schur, who was one of the founders of representation theory. I mean, that's somewhere always, that's achievement in math. If you have a theorem named after you, it's not. To have a lemma, in particular a lemma where the proof is very easy named after you, that means you've really achieved something. And that is often that in some way, if you look at certain theorems, it's often that actually the theorem itself isn't that much work. There is some technical lemma or something which is before it. That's where the hard work is, and that's named after the person who really did the work there. Okay, what does this lemma say? So how does he spell this? So he looks at two possibly different representations, and for some reason, he likes to call these different things with indices, which are exponents, which I find awful, because it really looks like exponents. So I will not call them rho 1 and rho 2, but rho and sigma. So we have G is a group. We have rho goes from G to GL V1. Yeah, I mean, he calls it rho exponent 1, and he calls it V1 with index 1. Allegedly, I think this was Leo Will, where there is something that his students reported that in a lecture, if he had three completely things which played exactly the same role, he would call one A, one gamma, and one gothic G prime or something. So sigma goes from G to GL of some other vector space, V2. And now let's assume that there is some kind of compatibility and F which goes from V1 to V2, which is linear. Okay, and now I want to have some kind of compatibility, basically a homomorphism property. Namely, I want that if I first apply F and then I apply sigma, that's the same as F circle row. Okay, so what does here? It's equality of functions, and the functions are defined on G. So what do I mean by this? I mean that if I pick for every element of the group, if I take rho of G and I take sigma of G here. Okay. On the right-hand side, rho of G will be a map from V1 to V1. It's not an easy sentence of German, it's your native language. So I map. This will be a map from V1 to V1, and then I apply F, which will map it to V2. Okay, so this will be overall a map from V1 to V2. Okay, what does this do? Here first I map from V1 to V2 with F, and then sigma of G is a map from V2 to V2, so this is also a map from V1 to V2. Or if you want, if you prefer, write it down. It's an identity on matrices. Okay. And now what this claims is that there are two things. First, if rho is not isomorphic to sigma, then the only way how this can happen is if F is the zero map. Okay. So, why is this the case? So, in some way, what this is saying, if you have two non-isomorphic, oh, and I should say they're both R, and they're both irreducible. That's very important. Right. If you have two difference or two non-isomorphic irreducible representations, then the only way you can make them compatible in this sense is if it is, if your representation is the zero representation. Or if you look at this with matrices, you could say, well, if F and F was invertible, you could move F over to the other side, then you basically would have again something like similarity. But it's not just similar, but it holds even if F is not inverted. Yeah?
So if your two representations are non-isomorphic,
yeah,
could they both be the zero vector?
No, the representation F is the zero. The representations could be, right? If F is the zero map, that holds trivially, because either I do something and then I map it to zero regardless of what it is, or I map to zero, and then because this is linear, it needs to stay zero. Yeah. Okay, why is this happening? Basically, this compatibility property tells me that the kernel of F and the image of F must be invariant under the representation. So this tells me that the kernel of F must be invariant under the representation rho. And here that tells me that the image of F must be invariant under the representation sigma. But they're irreducible. The only thing which can be invariant is the trivial subspace and the whole subspace. Okay, so if the kernel is the whole subspace, then the map is the zero map. Yes, that works, not very interesting. Otherwise, the kernel, it must be the trivial, then the map is 1:1. Well, then the image, since this is a non-trivial vector space, a non-zero vector space, the image can't be zero then. So the image must be the whole vector space V2. And then F is invertible. And then you can bring F over to the other side and you basically have that the representations are isomorphic. Okay. And that is basically that property. If you now go down and you write this down with matrices and you look at what happens with the diagonal entries of these matrices, diagonal entries, because you want to take traces, and you write this out in detail with correct indices, that's what implies the orthonormality with that inner product. That's where it comes from. Because the representations are irreducible, they can't have anything to do with each other. If you are in the one representation, anything else for another representation, you can't even have some subspace from where you could map to the other one, and it would still be compatible in a certain sense with the group action. If they're irreducible, basically, the only way you can do it is with a zero. And, well, the second part is stating that if actually the representations and the, if rho is equal to sigma, and so V1 is equal to V2, then F can only do scalar multiplication. And that in the end gives the normality, because the scalar one can calculate, and this 1 over G just will kill the scalar. Why is this happening? Well, if you map from the space on which you have an irreducible representation to itself, you must have, well, sorry, you have a linear map. It's a non-zero linear map. Well, if it's a zero map, it's scalar multiplication by zero, then it's anyhow true. So if it's a non-zero map, over the complex numbers, it must have an eigenvalue. Okay, and now you look at, not at f, but f, if lambda is the eigenvalue, but at f minus lambda times the identity. If f is a linear map, f minus lambda times identity is a linear map. And if f is compatible in this sense, then f minus lambda identity is compatible in this sense. Okay, so f minus lambda identity then is a map which clearly must have a kernel, because lambda, that's the definition of lambda being an eigenvalue, and then it must be the zero map. With the argument before, as before. So that basically is the reason for the irreducible characters forming this inner product. So in summary, we took representations, we got to characters, and now these characters, and that is really special over the complex or over an algebraically closed field in characteristic zero. Every representation can be written as a linear combination of irreducible, the character is a linear combination of irreducible characters, coefficients are non-negative integers. They tell me how this representation would decompose into blocks, and in fact, I don't even need to solve such linear equations, but I have this inner product, the irreducible characters form an orthonormal basis with this inner product, so I can do the decomposition by calculating inner products, and I've shown you in one example with a permutation character that these inner products actually have certain other properties. And there is one other thing which really to mention in the last minus 1.5 minutes or so. There is a process which is called induction. Okay. Induction is, well, you know what it is. It's basically the embedding into a real problem. You take a subgroup, so induction, you have a subgroup and you have a representation of the subgroup. Well, if you have a representation of the group, you can always restrict it to a subgroup and have a representation of the subgroup. But if you have a representation of the subgroup, the homomorphism has a smaller domain, it doesn't necessarily extend to the whole group. But by making the dimension larger and making it larger essentially by the index of the subgroup, you get a homomorphism. And it's the homomorphism is exactly the one of the embedding in the Reith product. You write the Reith product as a matrix group. Okay. And now you have basically that the two inner products, you can look at representations of the subgroup and representations of the whole group, and these inner products play together nicely.
Yeah, I just have to write.
And
everything
well, at least if you prove all the things about the connection between representations of the symmetric group and tableaus, is basically, on the one hand, you can take certain representations which are induced, and they come from natural subgroups, namely certain stabilizer subgroups. You take just trivial representations there, or you take the representation on the cosets, which is the induced trivial representation, and they together give you everything, and all irreducible representations, and then one can show that the coefficients, how something decomposes, can be calculated from the Young tableaus. And that's basically where, in the end, the Young tableaus give you these things. And there is one prominent formula, which is essentially the values of the Young tableaus. So if you count the number of Young tableaus of a certain shape, these are the character. These happen to be the character degrees of the symmetric group. So there is a formula which says sum over the squares of the number of Young tableaus of the shape, different shapes. The shapes correspond to the partitions, same number of partitions, conjugacy classes, that the sums of the squares is n factorial. That's this formula. Okay. Right. I'm more than out of time, so I hope at least this gave you a little bit of glimpse of what things are there, and I expect that next week Dr. Bentley. maybe even on Friday, but then certainly next week he will be back and we'll continue with his lecture. Thank you very much.
Thank you.